Hello there, and welcome to the Dear Dyslexic podcast series brought to you by Rethink Dyslexia, the podcast where we're breaking barriers and doing things differently. I'm Shay Wissell, your host, and I'm so glad you can join us. I'm a fellow neurodivergent, and I'm coming from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, where I live and work. And I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to all the tribes across our beautiful country and to all First Nations people listening today. Our podcast was born in 2017 out of a need to give a voice to the stories and perspectives of adults with dyslexia. And our voice has grown stronger year after year. We're now a globally listened to podcast with guests from all around the world. Join us for insightful conversations about living with dyslexia and other neurodivergences across all walks of life. Our special focus is on adult education, employment, social and emotional well-being, and entrepreneurship. We're excited to be bringing you this episode and invite you to like and follow us, or even better, why not leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform? So let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Dear Dyslexic podcast series. I am thrilled, a new word instead of excited, to have Helen Ross on the show. I should say Dr. Helen Ross, sorry. Dr. Helen from the amazing UK. And Helen has been really a mentor of mine for quite a while now. We've only ever met online. Helen's looking perplexed at that statement, and I'm not sure why. I actually can't remember how Helen and I met, but Helen is part of our research group.
I think so.
Maybe you came along for our research group.
Probably.
Initially, probably through LinkedIn. Anyway, we have a broad range of connections in the UK, and we're very lucky to have Helen start to come along to our research group as a mentor, really, and also to learn more about her research. And so today we were going to have a chat about all things mums, dyslexia, and research. Does that sound like a good cross of topics, Helen?
I think that's pretty much where we are, isn't it, really? Absolutely.
And we won't talk about world disasters and horrific things that are happening around the globe at the moment, because that's what we started talking about before we turned on the recorder. So welcome to the show, Helen.
Thank you for having me. It's really sweet. Like, when I just get really weirded out when people say nice stuff about me like that, and then to call me a mentor, when I look at you, Shay, and I'm like, you are absolutely amazing to have you say that I'm a mentor. I'm like, what? It makes no sense.
Well, I don't know about myself being amazing, but, you know, it's really hard to find other dyslexic women that are researchers. And so to be able to talk to women that are dyslexic in the research space, for me, is always really exciting and a privilege, really, to get to meet people like yourself, because it's not often. And in fact, even though this won't go out, today is International Women's Day. In Australia.
Is it the 7th or the 8th?
No, so this morning here, it's International Women's Day. So what a perfect opportunity to be talking to you.
Absolutely. And I'm like ahead of the game.
You are.
So we're like
ahead of the game. But I think it's hard to find women in research that have the difficulties that we have. And I think managing so many multiple things, because you work, you're a mum, and you do research. So, I mean, that, you know, they're big things that we're juggling.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
What's your name and where'd you come from? It's similar to AFCON blind day, if you've ever seen that. My first degree was mechanical engineering. I did mech eng and French because I liked hitting things. That genuinely is why I did it. I like hitting things and breaking them to see how not to break them. And I still do, but a bit less violently than, you know, steel, because I was in Sheffield Uni. But I got dyslexia. I got diagnosed with dyslexia when I was 17, and I just felt thick, really thick. And I'm clearly not, rationally. You know, you step back and you go, oh, she's not daft. Yeah. But that feeling really rubbish never leaves you. So I ended up teaching the Dearne Valley, which is in South Yorkshire, where all the miners' strikes kicked off in 1980. In fact, it was 4 years ago, 1984. It was on the BBC Breakfast yesterday. And it was a really tricky old area, because it's never got over it. It's never got picked up after the miners' strikes. And the ambient literacy is wobbly. So kind of having gone through school feeling a bit thick. Am I allowed to say that? I hope that's okay. I'm not trying to insult, okay? And then working in an area where just such disenfranchisement with education systems. I didn't want other people to feel like that. So me and Andy, my husband, got married, went traveling, faffed around in South America for a bit. And you've got time, haven't you, when you're traveling and you haven't got grown-up stuff like children and mortgage. And I wrote my PhD application because I wanted to know how to do policy stuff. And then I did that. And my supervisor, Dr. Tina Skinner, Bath Uni, ledge. She's a mum. She's dyslexic. Her kids are gorgeous. Her kids are so lovely. Her partner is just, oh, he's a husband now. But her like family, they're just amazing people. And she took a punt on me, I think, because I've got a profile quite like her partner, because he'd done engineering and moved into social policy and whatnot. West England Uni, I think it's who works at. And so it was all kind of this good kind of perfect storm with Tina. The stars aligned, and she's like my academic mom. She's amazing, and she's kind and lovely and so gracious and forgiving of idiots who didn't even know the word ontology when they started sociology. Yeah, and I just started doing that. And through living down near Bath now, because we were never going to live below the M4, and that didn't really go very well. It's the road between Bristol and London. Yeah, we're southern pansies now. But I ended up getting involved with the kind of local dyslexia scene groups, and an absolutely amazing lady called Caroline Folk, who's just, she's a powerhouse. I could not respect her more. And she's kind and always feeds me when I forget to eat at her house. She's the brain and brawn and organization behind Wiltshire Dyslexia Association. And I just kind of got sucked into the BDA, the British Dyslexia Association, do loads of noise making there. And my research is just, I've been really fortunate. I never wanted to be like a proper grown-up academic, so I can't be bothered. Uni can be quite slow and I'm not patient, it's obviously hard to believe. But I get to do kind of little research projects here and there, and I've ended up doing some really interesting evaluations of some products, some industrial educational tech. So about two years ago, I started working with a company, and I've ended up just making great friends with one of the people I've met from that company. He's just, guy's a ledge. And he's been a proper like mentor and just a great friend to me with working out how to drive myself as a business and been a Senko. And so, yeah, I've kind of ended up in this weird path of being a researcher, but a dyslexia assessor and a dyscalculia assessor to pay the mortgage and do cool stuff with the BDA. And we've got a little human as well, a lovely little human. So there's a lot of plates spinning. Google Calendar is my friend.
As you can see by what happened with us having to reschedule this, calendars end up my friend right now. But I have to stop you there. Helen, I had no idea you had a background in engineering. Oh, my God. And you thought you were thick. That is insane. That is hard. I cannot do numbers to save myself.
I mean, it's not a secret, but I did what? Because at school, I mean, I got A's and A stars at GCSE. So choosing, you know, like 16-year-old exams. So choosing what I was going to do was a bit tricky in that it was much of a muchness. And I couldn't be bothered to read books. So I was never going to do English literature. English language was like, at the time, I wouldn't have appreciated it. So I did maths, physics and German. And German was the easy A level because you just talk, which I'm quite good at. But yeah, I love maths. I absolutely love maths. The reason I love maths are the reasons most people hate it, but it's fun.
Oh my I can't even translate a decimal from the calculator onto a page. It is like I actually can cry looking if I have to have two different spreadsheets because I cannot, like, I love a spreadsheet to help me stay organized, but I cannot. The numbers just get jumbled in my head when I try to move them from one thing to another. It's terrible. I hate it.
Working memory is, I've got two screens here, so that's how I do life.
Yeah.
But like working memory is just this massive, great big turd in the life of most specific learning difficulties. So I've got to break that behind me is my plan for a book because people ask me, what am I writing about? I'm like, I don't know. It's written on the wall. Why would I keep it in my head? And so... But I do, I love maths, but I get why people don't. And working memory is just, well, I haven't got any.
I had a boss say to me, we're looking at a spreadsheet, and he's, I think the numbers we got at the top aren't right. I put $1.7 billion in the template. You know, I can't see that. I could not see it. I could not see I can't see extra zeros.
Are you discounting as well?
Well, they said I wasn't, but I was so sure because I remember before even getting literacy support, my mum says I didn't, but I remember getting extra reading help. But I always had math tutors in school.
Interesting.
I would have sworn I was because I struggle so much. It's like reading a foreign language to me.
But it is.
Yeah, well, it is.
It is a different language.
There you go. It should be 38 this week. That's way too hot. But yeah, I just can't do numbers. But it's interesting, on a separate podcast, maybe we could talk about dyscalculia because...
Oh, well, up for that, because I'm learning more about it as I assess more and more.
It would be so good to have a chat about it, and I don't want to sidetrack our podcast. But, you know, really, we need to start talking more and more about the other... Like, we don't talk a lot about developmental coordination disorder or dyspraxia, and there's a lot of people talking about that, like Dr. Amanda Kirby and... But there's not a part of Brian Butterworth. I don't really know anyone that talks about dyscalculia.
There's Brian Butterworth, and he's at the dyslexia show in Birmingham next week. Like this time next week, I'll be... Hang on, what day is it? Thursday. This time next week, I'll be there. Brian Butterworth's there. There's a chap called Steve Chin, who is absolutely lovely. He lives in Bath as well. Pete Jarrett does a lot of stuff with it. A lady called Judy Hornigold. I want to say she's Coventry Uni. And they're all really nice people. They're just lovely, lovely people. Not a bad bone in their bodies. They're just kind. People are so kind in dyslexia and dyscalculia one in the UK. But I think dyscalculia is the kind of underfunded, under-researched cousin of dyslexia. And there's the most wonderful, like a Venn diagram by Mary Colley and I want to say Jose Alquinas. I know it's Mary Colley, but if you Google Mary Colley specific learning difficulties diagram, you get this Venn diagram. And in the middle, there's all the commonalities like working memory, coordination, organization stuff. And then around the edge, there are all the other little dyslexia, dyscalculia, ADHD, various others. I can't remember.
Can you send me? Do you have her image? I know we're getting sidetracked right now.
No, it's brilliant. Mary Colley. See, I Google it that many times, genuinely. It's all over. I'll send you the link to a document that's...
Yeah, that would be great. And we're sidetracking completely. I was going to say that I've been to Bath because I used to live in Cornwall. So I am very familiar with... shouldn't say very familiar, but I am aware. I'm going to look at this link as we're talking. So in a different podcast, we can talk about...
That's all good. It's just that is like the daddy of all diagrams. It's so helpful for families as well because it helps them locate things for their kids. It's really, I don't even know how I found it, but I love it. It's my new favorite thing.
So most of your work at the moment is in children?
Yes.
Or children?
Yeah, for the most part. Like, just, I think because I've been a teacher and I trained in secondary teaching, but I end up assessing like real littlies, so 7, 8-year-olds from time to time. But because on the basis that if you avoid, if you assess people early enough, you can avoid some of the, frankly, the emotional trauma that is associated with just feeling crap your entire time at school. At least if kids understand why, you can avoid that I'm kind of feeling about themselves, or hopefully anyway. But I get more and more parents asking me to assess them. And I'm like, I just don't think I feel like I do them a disservice because I don't feel like I'd be honest with them. I don't know. My skill set is not adult education and adulting. I'm not very good at being a grown up, so I don't want to. I'm too silly. But on a serious point, I don't feel like I've got the skill set to assess adults. There are lots of adults that need it, but I wouldn't feel comfortable taking people's money for it.
Well, we're seeing more and more people come through our services getting the dyslexia screening that Judith and I do. Yeah. And
so important.
Yeah, and at least it gives them a likelihood of what's happening for them so they can get an indicator.
On themselves.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the people that come through and haven't been dyslexic, that's been interesting to try to work out, well, what is happening for them if they're not, you know, could it be auditory processing disorder, could it be something else? And that's the exciting thing, I think, about being a speech is, you can kind of try and workshop what are the other things that,
That auditory processing disorder. I've had a couple of kids that have had it. I used to work at Stonehenge School at Amesbury near Stonehenge. And then one of my colleagues, her lass had it, and they had to get a referral to Great Ormond Street. Because at the time, apparently that was the only hospital in England. I can't speak to Scotland or Wales, I don't know, but the only hospital in England where they had sort of the skill set within the audiologist people to do it. I've got an ADHD assessment in June, though, because I'm deranged. I'm off my head. I can't keep still. I'm wriggling.
I can't wait to find out if you do. And I'm, I said in my last podcast, Judith has diagnosed me with it, but not formally. So we talked about that in our PhD group, didn't we?
Yeah.
I've been with the board, actually, the dyslexic board, and one of the board members said, really? And Judith definitely got some characteristics. So I do want to get assessed. I'd like to know at one point, because then I can kind of work out, well, actually, this was my reading difficulties and this was actually not related to reading.
Yes.
To see whether there's a differentiation.
Building the picture of yourself, isn't it? And after, because I found that diagram that I sent you the link for, and I did, as a specialist assessor, I'm allowed to look at effects of attention problems on learning. I can't diagnose ADHD, but I did the course just out of nosiness. I don't want to do that kind of diagnosis, but I wanted to make sure I was making an informed choice not to, kind of thing. And I was like, that's me, and that's me, and that's me. And then my husband's go, and at church last Sunday, the minister's wife, she went, I can't remember what we're talking about. She said, oh, but that's your ADHD, isn't it? I was like, I'm not formally diagnosed. And she was like, on what planet are you not diagnosed? And she doesn't hear me well. Like, they're only new to the area sort of in the last couple of months. So it's not like we have a long-standing relationship. She's lovely.
At Rethink Dyslexia, we are doing things differently. As a global leader in creating inclusive environments for adults with dyslexia, our commitment is to provide individuals with opportunities to live healthier, happier, and more connected lives. Through our range of tailored services, including coaching, learning and development programs, consultancy and training, we're helping dyslexic individuals, businesses and organizations to better understand and support their dyslexic employees. So if you're looking for insights, inspiration and expert advice on dyslexia and how you can provide inclusive practices and environments, then head to rethinkdyslexia.com to find out more or book your free consultation today.
But yeah, it's quite funny.
Before my mum passed away, I said to her, do you think I could be ADHD? She said, definitely not, Shay. But the more I've learnt about it and the more I hear people speak about it, I think, you know, that could be highly possible. But it would not detract from our core focus of dyslexia, even though we're getting asked more and more to broaden out our scope. You know, that's not my research area, and that's not in time, hopefully. It might, because we know there's still a significant lack of research around workplace and ADHD, and the interaction between ADHD and dyslexia is so high, like that co-occurring.
30% or something?
Really? Well, I think in my thesis I had referenced 40% of people with ADHD will have dyslexia.
I could believe it.
So, and look, we are on the side of caution with prevalence rates, so that image I sent out through LinkedIn, you might have seen, of one person out of 100 will be autistic, 5 will be ADHD and 10 will be dyslexic. Mm. But, you know, the prevalence rates are so varying in around the world and how people get assessed and the age they get assessed. We're just seeing so many adults now getting the opportunity to be assessed.
Yes. I'm just trying to look. See, this is because we're sitting at the computer. I'm trying to find that, like, picture now, but I can't.
I'll reshare it with you. Yeah, so I can't even remember where we were now.
No, it doesn't matter. Life happens.
ADHD. Well, that'll be interesting to learn about whether you do have ADHD or not.
June, sometime in June. It's written. Yeah. It's in my calendar because I've no idea what date it is.
Well, Dr. Neil Alexander Passe asked me to review his latest book that he's sent off to print, the ADHD, to Crime Pipeline. And wow. He had a checklist at the back of ADHD characteristics. Mm. And I'm not a huge fan of checklists because, you know, you can go online and there's a checklist for dyslexia and it's 50 characteristics. Yeah. So everyone's dyslexic then, aren't they? I mean,
they're quite complicated.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a good screening tool. And I said to Neil, oh, yep, I ticked most of those boxes. It's like, are you going to get assessed if they're at some point? But the research part, did you find, how did you find doing your research? Because we've jumped all over the place.
Oh, lordy, research. Like, I love it. But the reading side just made him. I don't like reading. I like writing. I really like writing. But to be able to write, you have to read, if that makes sense. And you have to.
Yes.
And I'm the kind of person where I'll like read everything, kind of get this ridiculous overview, and then eventually kind of distill it down into, you know, you read 96 papers to write three sentences kind of thing.
Mm.
But I find it hard. Windows Read Aloud, I get the computer to read stuff to me because I just can't do it. I'm just not very good at it. One of the tests I use the academic achievement battery.
Yeah.
And out of nosiness, I tested my own reading comprehension because of how the test works. It's not perfect. Of course it isn't. My reading comprehension was like 84, I think, was my standard score. And my reading, I couldn't do my own fluency, but my reading comprehension is pat. So yeah,
the screening tool we do, Judith tested it on me. And I think my reading was at an age of 11.
Let's go. I mean, it's not ideal, really.
It's not ideal. You think, wow, I've got a reading age of 11 and I've just done my doctorate. Like, it's insane, isn't it, when you think of it like that? But I found that reading journals, I would fall asleep, especially if there were numbers mixed in. Once the numbers were added and the p-values, my brain would just, no, and I would actually go to sleep.
On my shelf, I've got Statistics for Dummies because when I did engineering, I didn't do stats. The way our school timetable worked, ideally, I'd have done further maths and stats to build another A-level into further maths, but it just wasn't feasible. So I bought Stats for Dummies when I started I did an MRes to learn how to do sociology and stuff. And I did as much stats as I could because I knew I'd need it. I don't enjoy it because you can't hit it. I can't see what's going on with statistics. I can't picture it. It's all a bit abstract and airy-fairy, and it's just dark art, isn't it? It's like Harry Potter dark art. But having Stats for Dummies just gave me the tools to translate the language of statistics into my noggin, and it's the best book I think I've ever bought. Keep out the highfalutin fancy books. Stats for Dummies.
So I failed stats twice. I failed epidemiology and I had to do accounting three times.
Oh, bless you.
And doing my master's. And so each time I would go to the lecturer and say, I cannot do maths. I have a tutor. So I always had tutors for any math subjects at uni. I made sure of it. I think in undergrad for speech, you know, so much we had to do stats for 3 years and I was petrified of it, but I did group work. So I could learn through group work. I never quite got it, but I could do enough to participate in the group work and pass. But when I had to do those subjects, the more we talk about this, the more I think I need you to do a dyscalculia assessment on me.
We'll find a way. There'll be a way to do it online.
Often when I go to talk, I say, if you think of the specific learning difficulties or disability umbrella where you've got your dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, and dysgraphia, I said, for me, I'm just one big disability under that umbrella because I feel like I've got the mix of all of them. Like I couldn't ride a bike till I was 10. I couldn't do my shoelaces up till I was, you know, like 7. So all of those, and the first sign in kindergarten was the teacher said to my mum, she's really clumsy on the equipment.
Right.
So I've always wondered, is it just that it's actually I've got a mixture of all of those? Or then someone said to me, if you're ADHD, you can be really clumsy. So then I started to think, well, could it be like, how do you unpack it? But the more I talk to you and the more you talk about maths, I think, I mean, how many labels do you need? You don't need many. Two's enough really for me right now. My family would go, oh my God, Jay, you can't be serious. You can't have another label.
See, I was talking to mum and dad about this, what's for this ADHD assessment. We've talked about it a lot over the years because my brother's got autism. Like in old money, I've got an itchy leg. In old money, it was Asperger's, but it's autism. And I was like, mum, I am a bit wappy. And she was like, well, what are you sort of hoping to gain? And my parents, they were pretty sound about it, mum and dad. But they said, they had to do all the forms and stuff last week. They were like, I don't remember. They don't remember any of my, because I mean, I'm 42, you know, I'm not like, I'm not still at school. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm going to get Andy, my husband, to somehow attend part of the appointment because it's in Surrey. I live near Bath. It's like a long drive. And he's got to collect our small human from school at some point. But I think Andy's, some input from somebody else is really, really important for the, like, for triangulation of information. But I just, yeah.
I have all my primary school reports. And so we could see from grade two, my dyslexia started.
Wow.
Yeah. Because from grade two, it would say, you know, not paying attention, lazy, not getting spelling right, trouble with maths. So, and then it was consistent maths and English consistently throughout school then that there were difficulties. So that's been really interesting and it's great. And handwriting, there was always comments about my handwriting as well and my sentence structure. So that's been a really good record. And when I used to present, I'd have photos of my different report to show how it started from primary school. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You have to come back to us. I think I've got three new podcasts that we need to do.
Okay, up for it. I'll talk for England. It's not a problem. I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting. What I find, and I don't know if you're the same, I just find that I'm looking at Daniel now, my little dude, and he's a bit wappy. It's like having a mirror. His personality, his faces, his body language, he's got my eyes as well. He's a little, I'm surprised. I don't know how I made it to adulthood. How my mother didn't kill me, I don't know. But Daniel, he's such a good kid, but I just see the wriggle bum in him. His coordination, his hand-eye coordination's fine, but then he comes to writing and he's got that thing where letter formation's a bit of a faff, his teachers told us the other week. And he can do his phonics, but he's not particularly keen on it and he's not keen on reading. And so and having been a Senko as well, you kind of hyper-vigilant to how wappy is my child, because he's a criminal mastermind. He's so clever. And I don't know if you find that with Ava. Are you watching
her? Yeah, I know. I'm hyper-vigilant. And around it. So she's immersed in literacy. She's got a great pen grip. She's going to a preschool now that like immerses them in numeracy and literacy because I just, I want to make sure she's got the best start possible in case. Mm. But she's extremely coordinated. She's highly intelligent, which we know all of our children are extremely intelligent. And my family hate me labeling and diagnosing people on the side. But so far, she doesn't have any of the things that I think I had in that coordination. She's identifying letters. But, I mean, she's not grade two. So it'll be interesting when she goes into this new environment, how it develops and whether anything starts to come forward. But at the moment, and my husband keeps saying, I can't have two of you. I can't live with two of you like this.
That's basically Andy's dialogue. He's always, because obviously I talk a lot. All my school reports say, she's got a lot to say for herself. She's very opinionated. And so Daniel's, he just talks. There is no filter.
Yeah.
And I talk, and Andy, you sometimes say, when he's just, shut up, leave me alone. Like, poor bloke. He's so patient, bless him.
Ava is a non-stop talker at the moment, which is amazing. It's amazing to see their language development.
Oh,
and
yeah,
as a
absolutely.
Speech pathologist, I wish I'd had a little human to learn. I would have learned so much more watching a live person develop. But she doesn't sit still and, yeah, she doesn't stop talking. And I actually feel quite overwhelmed sometimes. Like I feel mentally like I can't process everything she's saying to me. And then I'm like,
touching you and I'm like, no.
Yeah. So I find that can be a bit overwhelming and exhausting sometimes because I'm struggling to process. And now I just say to her, Mummy needs time to understand what you're saying in her head. And so I'm trying to start to explain to her, Mummy can't actually do that right now. And she'll look at me and go, what are you talking about? But it helps me then with my strategies.
Oh, he does. And he's like, Mummy, did you say the wrong word again? Yes. And he has the phrase, and he said it, he's got a little friend from school who's so cute. And Daniel will be like, Mummy can't multitask. I'm like, Daniel, one thing at a time. There's no point talking to me while I'm doing something else. I want to listen to you. Just... Mummy can't multitasking. Mummy can't multitask.
It's like in the car if I go, if I swear, and Ava's, what's wrong, Mummy? Are we lost?
Did you? Oh, no, we're
lost again. I'm like,
Daniel knows all the words, but he never says them. He's really good about I don't mind him swearing because his intent around language is, for me, is far more important. You can destroy somebody in very nice language, but he knows. Or if you like wallop yourself or you forget something, you know, Daniel's like, mummy, what's happened to you? Okay. I'm like, it's fine. That's so kind though, isn't
it's
it?
The, like, it's the getting lost. It just kills me. And it's just, oh gosh, mum, we're lost again. She's nearly three. She's not even three yet. And that's what she's saying to me. I'm sitting in the car, killing myself laughing, going, I don't, in my head, I'm like, I don't think she's just saying, I don't think she's just saying.
No. We always have it like when we go into Bath, because Bath is obviously standstill traffic. And so if you're late and you're like, gonna get into the city centre, Daniel's like, and you know, might be a little bit sweary. And Daniel's like, mummy, is it the bloody slow-mos again? Yes, Daniel. Yes, it is. I've broken my child.
They just learn so quickly, don't they? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I feel like we've just gone. I actually don't know. There's been no structure to this podcast and it's really just been a chat. That's hopefully weird. Whoever listens to it gets some value out of our secular conversation today.
I hope so.
But maybe we could have you on, because I think in my head as you were talking, having an opportunity to talk about dyscalculia and the work you do would be fantastic. But then I was also thinking maybe we could do a research podcast on how do we support, dyslexic people coming through that are...
I think that's a really good idea.
...at a research, up-and-coming researchers. Because I'm only very early new career now, how do we help, like through the group that we're running, how do we continue to support and then...
And give people a leg up. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that mentoring. So we have gone over time, I think, but we're not too bad. I think we've done pretty well. I can get my coffee in.
I can write my VAT receipts before I go to bed and finish my accounts. Yay!
Thank you for staying up so late.
Thank you for having me.
To me.
Absolute pleasure.
It's so much fun. And we will lock in some dates to do some further conversations.
Stop. Sounds good.
Have a wonderful evening. Thanks so much for your time. And everyone listening, we will put that document that Helen was talking about with the Venn diagram up on the website. And if you need any further information or to learn more about Helen and her research, which we really didn't get to talk about, you can find her on LinkedIn and anywhere else, Helen, that they can find.
I'm on the PDA. Artist for Beginners Twitter. If you Google Helen Ross Dyslexia England, you'll find me. Like, I've got blonde hair and blondish hair at various points. And
can we find you on BDA as well, British Dyslexic Association? You're the co-chair, is that right?
I am the co-vice chair. You can probably find me in there. I'm just at Dr. Helen Ross on Twitter, worst case scenario.
Okay, easy. On X.
X, yes. X. That.
That, I'm not on that. Okay, Moffat. All right, anyway, we will catch you at another time. Safe travels and thank you.
Take care. We'll
catch
you soon. Have a good day. See you later.
Thank you. Bye.
If you haven't done so already, make sure you sign up to our mailing list so you can keep up to date with everything we are doing at Rethink Dyslexia. So head to rethinkdyslexia.com.au. And don't forget, if there's anything you heard today that was distressing, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36. Thanks for listening and bye for now. Oh, yeah.